good news. Great news. Wonderful news. Okay, well, you know, today's one of those days where there's a lot of things bigger than sports. For those of you that are interested in marathons, the Boston Marathon was interrupted, as you all know, on Monday. That interruption was due to terrorism, killing three innocent young lives, one very young life at 8 years old, and one around 20 and the other around 30. Actually, she would have been 30, I think, tomorrow or something like that. I just don't understand why this stuff has to happen. But I do understand, not in an approval way, but I do understand people's motivation. I do understand it. I don't sympathize with it because I don't ever sympathize with violence as a solution for anything. But the good news is, in less than a week, the police in the United States, federal, state, local, work together in a manner that is not normal for those departments. They're very competitive. TV shows make fun of the competitiveness of those police forces. And what did they do? They worked together, and in less than a week, they literally put the dogs out to go after, you know, I could be like other people, call them lowlifes, like uncles, losers, but I prefer to refer to them at this time as suspects. Now, what we're hearing, you know, without their defense, is what's going on through the media. Does this mean they're not guilty? Absolutely not. Does it mean they're guilty? Absolutely not. A very unusual event the past 4 or 5 days in the Massachusetts area. Outside Boston, we've all been watching what's going on. Something totally unusual, like literally the show 24 or The Fugitive, or many of us have watched movies, TV shows that try to show what just happened this week. And in reality, because 4 days is a real quick time to do something like this, to turn from incident, perpetrators, suspects. And now we get to the part that's a little less exciting, but many in the legal system have to go through, thank goodness. You're innocent until proven guilty. The arraignment portion will take place. Usually it's on Monday, because they don't do it on weekends, but something tells me the stipulation or the normal way things work won't be the case. They will, in fact, arraign this suspect. In the United States, you're entitled to the Miranda rights, which basically just says, I'd like a lawyer, please, and I don't want to say anything further. You have a right to do that. Some of you may wonder why there's any good for the police force to ask questions and hope for answers after the Miranda rights are given prior to a lawyer showing up. Well, they may not be able to gather any fruit in the case against this particular suspect, But the police have to try to get as much information as quickly as they can to duplicate the events that we've witnessed the last 4 days. And that is, the trail was hot. They hopped on it, and they wanted to stay on it. They did. They succeeded, I believe, mainly because of that, because they jumped on it quickly. And the same is true for the Miranda rights. If they can, and I know you people who are, you know, rights to the people who may be criminals, while they won't be able to use the stuff that's garnered from these inquiries, if you will, these personal inquiries, short of waterboarding, I hope, well, they will be able to use this information to catch people who maybe now are running loose that may have been partners in this insane, crazy attempt to hurt as many people as you can. So, yeah. Don't think that they're denying this guy his rights because they want to interview him and interview him for 14, 16, 18 hours before a lawyer steps in. It's for the benefit of finding the other people whose rights don't hinge on his Miranda rights. Get them all. Get as many of them as you can. Get even the ones who didn't actually do anything but knew what was going to happen and did nothing to stop it. I talk about bullying every week, at least once a week. This is another form of bullying, and the only way to end bullying is to recognize it when it's there and do something about it. So congratulations to those in Boston for doing something really good. In Massachusetts, really, not Boston. My prayers go to all the families and individuals who were touched, not just hurt, not just killed, but especially, but also to those that were hurt by what happened, and to society in general that appreciates freedom and our rights, which I just spoke of. And I truly hope, my American friends and us, we Canadians, by the way, his aunt is here in Toronto. Let's hope that maybe the politicians will look at what happened here and realize there's more to life than their department. It is my hope that the Liberals, Conservatives, and NDP can do what's right for Canadians for a change. And yes, fight for their constituency. But stop doing that. If I don't get it my way, we are not getting it at all. Which in Canada is not quite as bad as the U.S., but fellow Canadians, you really have to take a look. Our politicians could take a big lesson from all those different departments of police and enforcement in Massachusetts. And my American friends, you know what I'm saying. And down deep, you know it's true. That maybe, just maybe, you should start making the politicians accountable. When 90% of the people say gun checks are a good idea, and 47% of the politicians say it isn't, and they are allowed to carry the day, is totally ridiculous. Come on. This soapbox is kind of nice. You know, it's a nice wood. There's no soap in it either. Well, I just wanted to say that, even if only one of you hear about this, I'm grateful that you did. So, tonight is going to be fun because Aaron and I are going to rant. Now, Aaron doesn't want to rant in the way that I like to rant. But, you know, Aaron's a pretty good guy. He's pretty up with the flow. And let's give him a call and see if he's willing to talk. What do you think? I think I'll try his home first. I'll try his home first. And you know what? Let's have some fun at the beginning. Well, you know what? Yeah, okay.
Hello.
Hey. Quiet. Me too. I have to be quiet.
Standing up for someone is the right thing to do. I am a red angel. I will not stand by. I will stand up for Amanda.
Do you want to be heard, disagreed with, or just plain shot down? Come on! Be brave! Call the Candid Frank Live Show, a.k.a. the CFL Show. You already hit the link to bring up the player, and you hit the play button so you can hear us. Now hit that little Skype button on that Candid Live player sitting there, like your pet wanting a snack. So to connect with us and tell us your thoughts, hit that little tiny, cute, and tempting Skype button. Right? Now, do it! Or call 714-242-5250. That's 714-242-5250. Hi, Aaron. How's it going?
Oh, not bad. Yourself, Frank?
You know, you don't want to talk about this event that took place in Boston, but I'm going to drag you kicking and screaming and hope for the best.
No, I didn't say I didn't want to talk about it. I have very certain specific opinions that I'm reasonably certain will offend half, at least, of your listeners.
Well, those three people have to just get by.
Fair enough.
Hey, listen, I'm a free speech guy. You know, I totally believe in free speech. But the free speech I believe in is the kind of free speech that is about solving problems, not personal attacks, not undermining other people's rights. So if you have an opinion and it's not intended to do any of those things, it's a welcome opinion. Fair?
Yeah, fair enough. No, you know, usually what I have is opinions. I don't really have a hell of a lot else.
You know, just the fact that people don't like our opinions is irrelevant, in my opinion.
Yeah, fair enough.
Right? I mean, we're here, you and I are bored, we got nothing to do, you know, our wives have had enough of us by now, it's 10 o'clock on Friday, you know what I mean?
Yo, you should have seen what Michelle was doing last week.
Oh no, what was she doing last week?
Sitting there on the corner of the couch next to me, tapping her finger.
Waiting for you to go to bed?
Waiting for me to get done with the show.
So do you think maybe you should hang up, or?
Yeah, well, then we went to overtime, and I figured, yeah, what the hell? I'm already in Dutch anyway, so may as well stick with it.
Oh, there you go. Okay. And we didn't solve anything in overtime, did we?
No, we didn't. But, you know, that's the way it goes sometimes, right?
Yeah. Well, maybe we should bring Michelle in so that, you know, her opinion is, you know, on this subject, we could use her opinion. What do you think?
Oh, I think that would be awesome. I just don't know if she's still awake.
Oh, okay. Well, let's not wake her up because does she tap
her? Well, I mean, we can always give her a go. Just let me just see if I can get in touch with her and forewarn her.
You want me to put another commercial on?
Hey, no, it's all good. We can keep going. Apparently somebody called me and I missed it. Really?
Probably me.
No, this was at 5:20 in the afternoon, so I don't think it was you.
Oh, okay.
Any luck raising Jer?
Hmm?
Any luck raising Jer?
Oh, Jer's at his nephew's. So they must be having some festivity thing or something. Well, he begged off for tonight.
Chicken.
Well, I agree, but you know, let's not be bitter, right?
No, I'm not bitter at all.
Coward.
Honk, honk.
You, He said on Facebook, he said, "Hey Frank, I'm with my nephews tonight. I'm out. Sorry." Now I don't
know if
out
point, exclamation that, point, exclamation point.
Does out mean that he's like not home, or does it mean that he's lying on his couch out?
I think it's actually a combination. In his case, it's probably a combination of both, as in he's out of the house and he's lying on a couch.
Oh, okay. All right. Oh, he doesn't tell the truth a lot?
Well, you know him better than I do.
Yeah, you know what? I think he's a very truthful guy. Just sometimes.
No, he's definitely honest.
Oh, definitely. There's nothing less than honest about him. So today at 8:45.
Yep.
They apprehended suspect number two,
yeah.
The guy with the white hat.
Yes. Which is actually kind of ironic when you think about it, because usually the hero in Westerns is the guy with the white hat.
Yeah, yeah, and it is. And you know, isn't it amazing how every time somebody does something really, I got to make sure, like I said, I've got to stick by my own rules. Isn't it amazing that every time there's a suspect, the neighbors, the friends, the school chums, the workmates, they all say, "He was a really nice guy."
Oh, he was phenomenal. He was great. He was a wonderful kid.
Term.
He was an angel.
Yeah, I even heard he was an angel on two legs.
Mm-hmm. Then,
wow.
Of course, you know, they had his interview with the obligatory aunt in Etobicoke.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
another interview with an uncle who was apparently bitter in Buffalo, I think, or New York.
Yeah.
Who said he didn't deserve to walk the earth, which is, rather interesting.
He called him a loser.
Yeah.
Brother, he called them losers. And then he corrected what he said, and he said, "Anybody who would do that is a loser." Which,
mm-hmm.
you know, I can actually sympathize. I sympathize more with the uncle's reaction than I do with the aunt's.
Aunt was saying that he was framed, and I'm thinking to myself, that's a bit of horse pucky.
Well, you know, it's possible. You know, Aaron, we must keep our eyes in our, you know, in case we're in the jury, you know, we must presume innocence first, right? But in reality,
Frank, I'll never be on a jury, Frank, and I can tell you why. It's because I can smell a liar from 400 yards.
There you go.
I will never be on a jury.
Good Lord. And she said she's a lawyer.
Oh, good God.
She's
it just
a
gets
lawyer.
Better and better, doesn't it? You know, like.
And they have a couple of lawyers in the family.
Well,
no,
you know, something like prejudicing a case or you know, prepping the field, that sort of thing.
Okay, so now they're referring to this as homegrown,
mm-hmm.
which now is the new term. It's no longer, you know, we're all aware of this. We've been made aware that terrorists can actually be local people who are, you know, radicalized here in Canada, the United States, and do things. But my sniff test says that it really looks like and appears to be an older brother leading a younger brother down a really horrible path.
It does seem to be that way. I mean, the older brother, 26, was the one that got gunned down last night. And from some of the reports I heard, the younger one ran him over trying to get away.
Yeah, he ran over him.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, you look at that and you wonder. Then, of course, the fact that the younger brother was found hiding in a boat in a backyard underneath a tarp. And you think to yourself, you know what, they had Boston locked down for 16 hours today. 9,000 cops looking for this one kid who was hiding in a boat.
20 feet apart in a circle around the area that they felt he was in.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's
so,
either
you know,
gross incompetence or he was doing a really good job of being quiet.
Well, he was doing a good job of being quiet while he bled.
Fair enough.
And, you know, I mean, this is, again, folks, this is just us talking. Now, here's why I want to talk about this, and I think it's really the reason I want to talk about this is you and I both know you're a pretty smart guy, smarter than me.
Mm-hmm.
And you know you're pretty media savvy, books, you know, movies, television, that kind of thing, right?
Okay, I'll agree with that.
Okay, and I'll say I am as well. And and the portrayal of you know, police forces and even in Canadian shows and movies, different levels don't like each other. In fact, in TV shows, they almost make it look like because they do, they can't solve a crime sometimes. And
no, there's a lot of portrayal of quote unquote interdepartmental friction.
Absolutely, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if nothing else, this tragedy, and let's not forget it's a tragedy, while there is a success, and you know, there's a silver lining, and that silver lining is only that the system works, at least the enforcement system works, and the enforcement system sure looked to work hand in hand to me with no. You know, there were no reports of any infighting and or, you know, my way or the highway type stuff. It seemed like they worked together. And the reason I raise this is if they can do it, why can't our politicians? What's different?
Yeah, the only real issue I have with that is when you think about it, politicians aren't really out for the best interests of their constituents. They're out for the almighty dollar. They're out for themselves. And this is
but
maybe an overly simple view, Frank, but for the most part, when you really think about it, when was the last time any voter really kicked in any money towards a politician's campaign?
I don't know. I don't have the
answer. Exactly. And think when you really think about it, there was a great movie starring Warren Beatty called Bullworth that
yeah,
came
I know
out
the
a
movie.
While back. And in one of the scenes, he goes to a black church and starts talking to the constituents there, and he says, you know what, honestly, you guys say you want all of this change out of all of our politicians, but when was the last time any of you contributed any money to my campaign? And none of them could answer that. And the fact of the matter is, really, in this day and age, unfortunately, money talks and bullshit walks. And more often than not, it's the money that does the talking.
And the more money there is,
the
more
louder that voice is. I mean,
absolutely.
I've heard comedians say before that America is a not a country. America is now 340 million special interest groups, and they're all out for themselves.
Yeah, yeah. I happen to think a little bit differently. I would frame it slightly differently, and I would say that the 1% rule the 99% myself. But that's just. You know, the way I look
well,
at it. And
truth of the matter is, it is an oligarchy. There are the very few that rule the very many.
Absolutely.
So.
And the monarchy now is not a king or a queen. It's a dollar sign.
And the problem that you really get into is with the Citizens United ruling in the States, where it was decreed that corporations and their contributions to political campaigns had the same rights as people.
Absolutely, that was the turning point.
Yep, and I mean that you know that leads to the whole corporations are people too, my friend. Quote from Mitt Special Underwear Romney. You know, and you get into all of that, and it's a very slippery slope. When you start giving corporations the same credence and the same weight and the same power as the individual voter, that's when you get into problems.
Absolutely, and I hate the fact that my short-term memory sucks. Also, I think the important thing to note is that not only do they, you know, my beef isn't with people investing money and making money. My beef isn't with people making a profit. My beef is on a, let's have a level playing field. Let's consider history here where, you know, the irony is that, you know, not the irony, but history has changed, you know, or I should say society has changed historically. You know, anybody who's taken any history and any old politics history knows that there used to be a law against monopolies.
Mm-hmm.
That changed.
No, that was the antitrust laws.
Absolutely.
You know?
And monopolies, there's a reason why people who were against them were against them. It was real simple, because monopolies breed selfish control over society. And so, you know, I'm not against business. I love business. Business is a great idea. I mean, anybody who has an idea and it makes money, congratulations. And if they make 100 times more money than I do, bigger congratulations. My problem is the thumb on the scale. That's where I have a problem. That's it. That's where my problem lies. My problem lies on equal opportunity for all. You know what I'm saying? In a fair fight.
I mean, when you really look at it, though, I mean, our society is quite literally dominated by these oligarchies. Is dominated by monopolies. You look at telecommunications. This is one example. You got Bell, you got Rogers, and who else do you got? You got Telus, you got Allstream, you got Fido, but Fido's a part of this company, and Telus is a part of that company, and you know, and then you look at oil. You look at Petro-Canada, you look at Esso, you look at Shell, you look at Pioneer, you look at Penny Gas, you look at Beaver. Some way or another, all of these companies are all interrelated. They all work for each other or with each other. There's very little competition out there pretty much anywhere you look.
And
go ahead.
I was going to say, and because I felt as though there was something else that you were going to throw out there. And
this leads to collusion between gas companies. I mean, look at gas prices across
Canada. Wait a minute. Am I to understand this correctly that you have the nerve to say that people with the same interests, even though they don't share the same bottom line, directly, only indirectly, would collude to make sure that both their bottom lines would get better?
Sure. Why not? What benefits one company benefits another. I mean, when you really think about it, the better that Petro-Can does, the better Esso does. The better Esso does, the better Shell does. The better Shell does, the better Ultra does.
Oh, I thought you were saying, let's see, I misunderstood you. I thought you were saying something like, if they all raise the gas prices by a buck, it helps them all make more money, regardless of what it really costs to pull gas out of the ground, right?
You know what? I'll be honest with you, Frank. Let's look at the gas prices now. As it currently sits, oil is sitting at what, $92 a barrel?
That's right.
Okay. Back when I first started driving, so we're going to take a little trip in the Wayback Machine to 1991. Gas was 35 cents a liter.
Okay.
Okay. Now,
and how much was a barrel of oil?
That I'm still trying to pull up. You'll have to work with me.
Okay.
But the way that things actually worked and the way that the things tended to track, it used to be that the price of a barrel was approximately the price for a liter of gasoline. Now, as it currently sits, the price of a barrel of oil right now is $97, $98. The price that I am paying for a liter of gasoline is $1.25.
Around there, yep.
Yeah, so there's a 25% discrepancy where there didn't used to be one before.
And it'll continue to be there. Now, we do have the issue in Canada there. Our oil is taxed for the ultimate good of, you know, what the government does for us, right?
Yeah,
like healthcare
and
stuff.
Know that's a load of horse shit.
Well,
let's be honest, Frank. Honestly, the Canadian government is taking a bath on Canadian oil right now, because instead of selling it to companies to places where they could make more profit, they're trying to remain in good with their U.S. cousins and their U.S. partners and selling it to them for less than market price.
Absolutely.
And this hurts Canada.
Absolutely.
But, you know, they're not going to admit that.
Well, we've gone from what happened in the U.S., and we got on that slippery slope where I mentioned that politicians should work as well as the enforcement officers in the state of Massachusetts did. So now we're into oil, which heavily is a governing issue. You know, in the United States, there's a big fight between conservationists and, of course, politicians, especially those that come from the West, you know, the tar sands and the pipeline that they're all talking about. And you know, Harper wants the pipeline. Many people in the U.S. want the pipeline. There's been a pipeline break in Arkansas that has cost billions and billions of dollars because of the problems that it created in cleanup.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the ultimate fear that Canadians who are conservationists and who want to make sure that, you know, our environment allows our next generations, you know, an opportunity to live and not die because of the effects of whatever we're doing, right? So, yeah, it is tough. I mean, and oil companies do write the check for all governments, including Canada. You know, and what I was going to say about politics and the sad part about politics is I use the Americans as an example because we seem to be headed in their direction in every regard. Harper is a Canadian version of American conservatism.
Yes.
You know, he really is. He's an American version of that. The way he applies his political plan, you know, with the personal attacks, he's brought those to the forefront. I mean, hours after Trudeau was, acclaimed the leader of the Liberal Party, Justin Trudeau, the son of Pierre Elliott Trudeau, one of our longest-running prime ministers, it only took hours for them to come up with attack ads.
Yeah, along with the website Justin over his head, along with, you know, a whole host of other stuff. No, the way that the Canadian Conservative Party is currently acting is very similar to the way the Republican Party was acting. And that's the fame, blame, and that's the blame, defame, and shame model of politics. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. Which I agree with your interpretation and your framing of the Conservative Party in Canada the way it exists today. And this is what I was talking about at the very top of the show, right? It's fine to disagree.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine to, you know, want what's best for your constituency. But I really abhor. I'm an old-fashioned Canadian, born raised. Old-fashioned, you know. But having said that, I have to remember there was a time, even in Canada, where newspapers were not referred to as the Telegram, the Star, the Herald. They were referred to as the Muckrakers. So, you know, I'm not sure, you know, it's like what's old is new again, right? But here's the thing. Having said what I just said right now, and that's the defense of people saying so, that, well, you know, they're not really any different than they used to be, but they were. We changed. We called them muckrakers for a reason, or shit disturbers, but they couldn't say in those days. So that's exactly what they were, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we realized maybe, you know, the Fifth Estate should be something more than just, you know, a tar and feather campaign, right?
Yeah.
Maybe we should be talking about reality and the facts and what's best for all of us, right? And let's all, you know, high tides raise all boats, right? Instead of trying to just figure out ways to raise only your tide and not the other guys. You know what I mean? And that's the sad part, you know, about politics today. You know, and I just wish that politicians would take a lesson from what happened in Massachusetts. When people work together, and the key here is, and this I don't want lost on people who are listening, the biggest reason why they had the success of grabbing this guy, somebody that they feel very comfortable is guilty and needs to be charged, arraigned, and go through the system, is that the people helped as much as the police forces did. Would you agree with that?
I would definitely agree with that. The part of the mandate of the FBI is actually to have the American citizenry report to them. That's actually been part of their investigative technique since about the mid to late 60s. Is they, for lack of a better term, the FBI crowdsources it.
Yeah,
as much information as they possibly can from video cameras and people in the crowd and security cameras in stores and shops and whatnot, because quite frankly, they just don't have the manpower to get up there and do it themselves. They need assistance from the public, And that's, you know, that's how they make it work.
And the best way to describe it, and you're 100% right, that's why they invented that poster, the
mm-hmm.
most wanted.
Yeah.
You know, they have the 10 most wanted. It goes back, people helping the police. You know, it goes back, like you said, to the 60s and that most wanted poster where they put a picture out there and people find this guy. This guy can't hide. This woman can't hide. And,
yep.
and in the new technology era, which we live in today, where, you know, you look in the mirror or you ask who's Big Brother, all you need to do is look in the mirror because we're all Big Brother now. I've got this beautiful camera now that shoots HD movies, you know. I can shoot in HD. So, you know, if I was at that event and I shoot in HD and, you know, we're talking quality video, which is the reason why they caught these guys. Because people, in general, have the ability to take snapshots of life. And
mm-hmm.
I'm really glad that, you know, the way the police are playing it, they're grateful to the people who helped them. And my hat's off to the citizens in Massachusetts who forwarded all that information, along with the ones that spoke, you know, immediately about the people that they were looking for. Because as I found out watching the news, there were some people who recognized them but couldn't believe it was them. You know what I mean, Aaron? And they didn't call. They knew, they felt it was them, but they couldn't believe it. You know, going back to what that early, how we started in this conversation, where when someone says, did you know what this guy did? You go, no. He's such
no,
a nice,
it couldn't have been him.
He's such a nice guy. Do you know he walked by my dog at least 27 times and never kicked him? He's a nice guy. You know?
Well, I mean, you look at other reports as well for the youngest guy. He was apparently seen on the campus at UMass where he was studying.
Wednesday.
I believe he was second year med. Yeah.
He was there when?
Wednesday.
Wednesday?
Yeah, after the bombing was done. He was apparently spotted on campus, walking around,
yeah,
going to classes and shit.
He was in the weight
yeah.
room. He went to some exercise, you know?
Yeah. You know, and you look at this and you think to yourself, so they picked these guys out. You know, I mean, there's the big dramatic police chase with them throwing explosives out at the cops and... You know, the younger guy running over his older brother to get away and all this other happy crappy. And you think to yourself, did they really do that? Like, how is that even possible in this day and age? Here's these two kids that have been in the States for about 10 years, you know, emigrated from Chechnya. One of them emigrated when he was 16. The other emigrated when he was 9 years old. Yeah, and, you know, 99% of the population in Chechnya is Muslim, apparently.
Well, it is a Muslim
yeah.
community, and
the unfortunate thing is this all goes to reinforce the negative stereotypes that all Americans. Okay, let me rephrase. This goes to reinforce
the stereotypes that the majority
of the Americans believe in that all Islam, all people who follow Islam, all Muslims are terrorists, which is just not true.
Okay, good, good save.
You know me, Frank.
No, I know. I'm just kidding.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just not true. I mean, that's like saying all Catholics are pedophiles.
Well,
that's like saying all Jews are money launderers. It's not true.
Let's be specific here. All Catholic priests are pedophiles.
Well, yeah. We'll work with that.
I can't say that. That's just a horrible thing what we just said, and I apologize to the priests who aren't. Let me say this.
It's exactly the same reason why you'll never have a white terrorist in America. There will never be a white terrorist. And the reason why there won't be a white terrorist is because you can't be an evil person and be part of the majority. Anybody who's – the most recent guy who mailed rice in is an Elvis impersonator.
Aaron, I think you're going over the edge on that one. That one there.
I may be going a little bit off the reservation, but just hear me out on this one just for a second, okay, Frank?
Huh?
Hear me out on this one just for a second.
Okay.
The most recent guy, the guy that mailed rice into not only to the Republican but to President Obama, is an Elvis impersonator who is apparently, according to his ex-wife, off his meds.
Your category.
And that was Aries weighing in. Yes. But I mean, the fact of the matter is, there's never going to be a white domestic terrorist who isn't mentally unstable.
Oh.
In the same way that there's never going to be a black criminal who's not a gangbanger or a drug dealer.
Okay, so you're sipping out of the stereotype cup.
Yeah, I'm pointing at the stereotype mug at this point. Yes.
Yeah, I get you. No, and what you're saying, and for those that might not understand what you're saying, I'm going to tell you what I think you said, and I agree with you, I concur with you, and that is, we do have a problem as a society that we stereotype people, and the proof is, I'm no different than anyone else. As soon as that bombing happened, I said, they're Muslims. How's that for a racist remark?
No, and it's the first thing that springs to mind. Why? Because it's something that you've been hit over the head with since 2001. All Muslims are terrorists. All Muslims want Sharia law, which is another bullshit lie by the right. All Muslims want this, all Muslims want that. Islam is a violent religion. Islam is a fascist religion. It's just not true.
Absolutely not true.
But people believe it, and this goes back to P.T. Barnum.
But Aaron, there's some truth to it. You see, that's I'm Italian, all right.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was growing up, I kept watching on TV that Italians mafia, Italians mafia, Italians mafia, Italians mafia, and I knew very little about the mafia. You know, my parents didn't own guns. My parents didn't have baseball bats that they used on people. So for me, it was hard to understand why people would accuse all Italians of being mafia. Unfortunately, mafia is just, they're just Italian criminals, right? It's just a portion of the group, right? But unfortunately, that portion of the group seems to rule the image of the whole group, which is what you're...
It's the few spoiled apples that ruin
and it's
the
what you're, it's what you're referring to. And hey, let's go through all the racial stereotypes. Irish people, they're all drunks. Is that another stereotype?
Yeah, Scottish people love to fight.
There you go.
Chinese
you know,
people can't drive. I got a ton of
great,
them.
But they do great laundry.
Well, they do fantastic laundry.
You know, and they do serve excellent cat and dog.
That's why their restaurants are vermin free.
But having said that, and this is the part, Aaron, that I think is really important for people. Before they start yelling and screaming at us about this, they should first take a breath and understand what we're trying to say here. I know where you're coming from a good place, and I hope I am too. And that is that, yes, the first thing I thought of, first thing that ran into my head, if it's anyone, it's my first guess is Muslim. But that's like a guy who's betting on, you know, the Pittsburgh Penguins this year, as opposed to a few years ago.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? We're talking.
No, I totally get that.
We're talking odds here. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm saying that they did it, but that's the first thing that came to mind. So let's write that one off. You know, when you see in a community where, let's say, poverty is in Toronto, let's say poverty's I'm trying not to be racist, but this is going to come out anyway. You referred to gangbangers. And people automatically, somebody gets shot in a community like that, the first thing people think is someone black. And usually
that's not far from the truth.
And usually,
people are going to think it's either Regent's Park, Jane and Finch, or Scarborough.
Right.
Those are the three neighborhoods that instantly spring to mind.
And what is that? What is that? What is that? The police. It's something the police use. It's called profiling.
Yeah, it's racism by location.
Absolutely.
I mean, when you really think about it, there are great neighborhoods. There are great areas in Scarborough. It's not like that. I have never had a problem with Regent's Park or Jane and Finch. It's not like that. As a whole, generally speaking, the people there are very nice. It's the few rotten apples that spoil the bunch.
Absolutely.
This is why entire areas end up getting typecast.
And those few hijack the ethnicity of that group, which you know, going back to the guy that the uncle, when he was as hard as it was for him to speak English because it isn't his first language, and I, and you know, I really do, looking at the big picture, I admired what he did. He went there to, he came out to protect his family. That's why he came out. And any of you who think that he was trying to live in denial and do this and do that, I don't think so. I think he's scared for his daughters. He has three daughters, I think. And he wanted to make sure that people understood that he hadn't had anything to do with these people for some 6 years, since 2005, 8 years. 2005 or 2006. This was his claim. Now, you know, whether that's true or not is left to be seen. But at the end of the day, you know, you can't tar and feather everyone who's related to somebody who does something wrong, not only by race, but also by family, right?
Yeah.
So I admire what he did. I know what he was trying to do. And he did a very good thing, and I really appreciated him when he said that those, if they did that, the loser part I could have lived without. I didn't like the loser part. But I did like the part when he said he was ruining the reputation of, and he was trying to say, his ethnic group, you know? And that's what it was doing. And he was defending his people, you know, he is, right? And he has a right to do that, in my opinion. He has a right to do that. And just because they're Chechenian doesn't mean, just because them and the Russians don't get along, you know, doesn't mean that they're evil people, because, you know, I just don't think that that makes someone evil if they're looking for their independence, in my opinion.
No, communism isn't necessarily for everybody.
No, and just like democracy for everybody.
Yep, exactly.
And when I say that, and I mean from our leaders' approval, not us. I'm talking about Canada as a country looks at the United Arab Republic as some sort of ally. They don't allow women to drive. They cut people's hands off who steal. They live by Sharia law. And I don't quite agree with everything they do. But politically, they're okay.
Yep.
Whereas you have Cuba, from the American perspective, which no one should associate with. And some would argue that it isn't that bad a place. Yes, there's poverty and all that kind of stuff. But there are worse places in the world. So where do you draw the line?
Yeah, exactly. That's the question is, where does it become unacceptable for these sorts of things and these sorts of conditions to exist, and where is it perfectly okay? I mean, do we define where it's okay for these circumstances based on countries that we like? You know, I mean, that's really what it boils down to is what sort of behavior are we willing to accept out of people that we would consider our allies?
Absolutely.
Now, the president of Chechnya was quoted as saying that if you want the source of evil, you need to look at America.
Yeah, I
understand where he's coming from on this one, though, Frank, because he is trying to protect himself.
Absolutely.
He's trying to distance himself from the belief, mistaken or not, that these individuals are representative of how Chechens behave. Fact of the matter is, they aren't. They were in the United States for 10 years. They learned what it was like in America for people that weren't white, weren't Christian, you know, weren't straight, whatever it was. And they realized that that was probably something that they weren't prepared to live with for the rest of their lives.
Go ahead. Let's be honest.
No, you
go right
ahead. I was wanting to hear what you were going to say.
Well, what I was going to say is that neither are mutually exclusive, right? You know, like Hitler wasn't 100% a bad guy. He just had – geez, this is a hard way to – all I'm trying to say is that bad people aren't bad all the time. There is no such thing as someone who's 100% bad.
Hitler had some great ideas. Hitler had some great ideas. He just went a little too far with them.
which is a polite way of saying
he turned into a royal jackass.
When you start killing people for no reason, when you start experimenting on people for no reason just because of what they are, yeah, you're over a line. You know,
until Kristallnacht, his economic policies weren't all bad.
No, you see, it's not the economic policies. It's just like our prime minister. You know what? Maybe that's the example I should use rather. Let me take that Hitler thing off.
Let's go to safer ground and work with Harper, shall we?
Let's go somewhere where people can relate. You know, not everybody voted for him.
No.
Right?
He actually only got about 24% of the total vote. Voter turnout for the last election, Frank, was 62%. Of that 62%, Harper got 38 of the 62, which works out to just over 25% of the Canadian popular vote.
Yes.
So he got a minority with a super minority. Sorry, he got a majority with a minority.
Absolutely, with a minority of the vote. Well, it's the same thing. Well, it's the same thing in the United States. We hear about gun control, and we hear about registration of weapons, and you know, background checks. Sounds reasonable to me. And they do, and they did a survey, and 90% of Americans, and I think they said 80% of those with NRA cards in their wallet agreed with universal background checks.
Mm-hmm.
But 47% of the state of the senators were able to stop that law being signed or moved on to the next level of government.
Mm-hmm. This is what we call tyranny of the minority.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't matter if you're Republican or Democrat. Whichever party is in the minority will be screaming about the fact that it's tyranny.
You're 100% right. I'm just calling John if he answers his phone.
Okay.
I think he answered his phone.
Oh, yeah, I did.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Not too bad, not too bad. What's going on?
We're all getting controversial up in here.
I hear. I caught the show late. That's why I sent Frank a Facebook message saying, who's on? What are you guys talking about? I had no idea.
We're trying to sneak under the radar. John, I wanted to make a public apology.
Why?
Well, you were asking me what I meant about on Facebook. I posted it was the irony of when you called me the other day. I didn't.
You called me.
No. When you called on the show and then you hung up.
I didn't call the show and hung. Did I hang up?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Don't worry about it. And all of a sudden, the show went to hell. All of a sudden, the internet crapped out, and I lost Mike Bradwell. Oh, just so Aaron, so you understand, I was in the middle of interviewing Mike Bradwell.
Yeah.
And the internet went nuts.
Oh no.
And I'm beginning to realize what happens. I've come to realize that if I have a popular guest on, Blog Talk Radio can't handle the massive interest.
Well, it's a good thing I'm not popular then. Your show will be functioning on Friday.
that's too tough on yourself, man.
That's honest, bro. I have opinions that not a lot of people like.
No, that's too hard on yourself.
So, John, that's what I meant. I apologize if you think that I meant anything overtly rude. It was not. I just thought it was ironic. You called me, and then all of a sudden, the internet started misbehaving. And if you think back to the situation, you'll understand why I said it. Looking back, because you said you wanted to laugh at the joke too, because you didn't understand it.
Yeah, I didn't get it because it must have been an auto redial. I always have you on auto redial on the show, and I don't remember calling and then hanging up. First of all, calling in, I was on hold, or how did it happen? I saw your number
come up, and then about 5 minutes later, later.
Oh no, Frank! This is what happened. Let me explain. This is what happened. I put your show on. And I hear no volume when I have it on my tablet. So I'm thinking, let me go check, because that's the best way to check. If you can't get it on your computer, call the number, and then you'll hear you talk. If you're not talking on the phone, the show's not on at all. So I'm thinking, wait, then it must be my tablet. And I hung up immediately because I heard your show was on. I called to be on the show.
But now you understand? You got booted, and then because remember what happens. You know more than anybody that what happens is I could literally get booted off, and the show's still on.
Frank, you don't have to tell me. We went through 2 months of nightmares with
exactly.
Blog Radio,
and anyway, that's why I wanted to call. I wanted you to know that. So what we're talking about, because you always to me that you like talking politics. And
yeah.
I thought of you because of two reasons. One, I owed you well, you know what? Maybe it was maybe an apology is too strong for what I was. I hate when people say. I hate to say when people fuck you over. I hate when people say, "Listen, I need to explain."
Oh.
You know what I mean? You know what I mean, Aaron? You understand what I'm saying?
No worries. Let's go to the politics. That's better.
Hey,
it's
Aaron,
over and done with.
Are you still there, Aaron?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, okay. All right. Anyway. So it started because, to make a long story short, you're aware of what's going on in Massachusetts, in Boston.
Of course. Of course.
And
yeah.
You're aware that they caught the guy.
Of course, yeah.
Right? You're also
yeah.
probably aware that there's been, like in Massachusetts, the governor actually, he posted, in one word, when they brought in they arrested the culprit, supposedly.
Right.
He sent on Twitter. Teamwork. And it raised the issue in my mind that you know, we all watch TV and movies and stuff like that, you know, John, and we see how the police departments don't get along and they're very competitive, right?
Right.
And I was amazed to see how this worked. And not only that, the effect that people have on the police by helping them find these guys, because the people also deserve a lot of credit, people and businesses, right? So I was
Absolutely.
Just saying, why don't politicians learn from this? Because I happen to think that that's the biggest thing that we lack in both countries, here in Canada as well, where politicians are so busy trying to feather their nest or appear to be feathering their nest, if not their nest, feather the nest of their party and their close associates, right? Or
well,
just worry
Frank,
about their neighborhood.
I think, Frank, first of all, this is all sad what's happened, I have to say. But again, you have to understand why this aggressive communication and everybody working together happened. You have to understand, there's a bigger picture here. This is a big embarrassment, first of all, on the security systems, on the actual protection that should have been provided at these kind of events. And it's a huge embarrassment because it's not a terroristic act. This was an internal American citizen act that happened. These guys are citizens. They had no relations to Chechnya. They had no relations to any sort of, as far as they're saying right now, because their travels didn't show that, their records didn't show that they had communications with some sort of a cell that was working. This was two individuals who, had families who are now dejected and embarrassed by all this that's happened. These are two individuals that went rogue and went on their own. And it's caused a huge, huge embarrassment to the security system there. And so they went aggressively, angrily at this, put all their force behind it. And this is the same thing that's going to have to happen to the politicians in the United States. They're going to have to get embarrassed. They're going to have to show that what an embarrassment and a weak politics system that they do really have. And this is an example of it. This is what happened in this past week. Are two things. One, in Washington, when the Gun Control Act was not put through, that's a huge embarrassment. Everybody's embarrassed. And Frank, guess who's doing all this? It's not the Democrats. It's the Republicans. Texas, Bush's state, is the big front runner on this. You heard that senator, the governor, he was the one talking out loud and proud, saying that he's shooting this whole thing down, and they're not going to let it go through. Okay?
You're talking about Governor Perry, right?
No, I'm not talking about Governor Perry. It's the other guy that I saw him. He had it on CNN. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So this thing that's happened in Boston, this is this is murder. These guys just went out to murder somebody. A terrorist act? Well, terrorist acts then happen every single day in Chicago when over a weekend they get 10 murders. Okay. We only had 3 murders. I'm not going to say only. That's kind of putting it really in a sad state when I say only. We had 3 murders in this situation, and it was such a huge manhunt. Well, in Chicago, where guns are fluent on the streets, there are at least an average of 10 murders every weekend there. That's what I hear and that's what I read, okay? So how come people aren't going aggressively after all those criminals and all those weapons and all? Nope, it's not going to happen. This thing was a big public embarrassment to security systems in Boston, to the FBI, because how do you find a cell or two people like this? These guys
John,
didn't have – yeah.
John, you're not going to like what I'm going to say right now.
What?
Because the FBI was aware – of the older brother. In 2011, the Russians asked the Americans the FBI to look into the older brother because they had concerns about him. And the FBI, using a word that you like, they vetted him and did nothing.
You know what, Frank? This is all after the fact that they say. But hold on a second. I don't mean to interject, but...
Yeah,
I get you, but then if that's the case, then it's even a bigger embarrassment, the fact that they had
this
guy.
I'm agreeing with you.
So, but you know
you.
What? But, Frank, I believe that they have 99% of the people on their radar in the United States. After what Bush put through in the last 8 years with the lax privacy laws that they put in, I bet you any money, everybody is being listened to and tapped in, you know, on a regular basis, even if there's a funny suspicion towards it. That's how lenient these privacy laws got in the United States, and then they got reversed. I think Obama tried to reverse them and stuff like that when they changed the majority of the House down there a few years ago.
You're not going to like this, but CISPA just passed last week, too.
Is that right?
Yep.
Okay, well, you know what, guys?
They ninja'd that one through last week when nobody was looking.
John, they're not gonna give up. The powers that be are not going to give up the opportunity to spy on everybody. They're not going to give up that opportunity. And you're 100% right, John, that it's an embarrassment. I agree with about 80% of what you said. The only thing I'm going to disagree with at this point is the same, you know, and you weren't at the beginning of the conversation that we have here. My opinion is this, is that all we know right now is the beginnings of what we're going to find out. And I would even go as far as defending what you're saying by saying this. We're not even sure that the accusations that they're going to lay out, you know, are going to be accurate anyway. Like, they may say that these guys did have, and they may try to, you know, say that they had these kinds of connections based on, like, you know, for the fact that the kid went for 6 months to Russia.
Right.
And then now they say, what was he doing there? Well,
yeah, but
you
they
know,
have family there too, Frank.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
if you hear from what the family's been saying, they haven't had relations with these guys.
You're misunderstanding my point. I'm agreeing
with you. No, I
get
your point.
I'm saying that. That kind of situation, that kind of fact can be construed in many different ways. It's not necessarily like I know a lot of people that go to Europe for 6 months and they're not planning terrorist attacks. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, but they can. There's nothing wrong with the government saying, let's investigate and let's find out the truth before we broadcast it. But like you said, there's stuff that gets broadcasted only because of political reasons. And even – and, John, this is the part that I find very interesting in my mind. Even if you're right, they'll do their best to hide the fact that they had a chance to know what was going on, just like 9/11. They could have stopped 9/11. The Americans could have stopped 9/11.
No, you know what? 9/11, first of all, I saw a lot of documentaries on that, and I believe half of them, okay? I think that was orchestrated. I think when you allow the Osama family to fly out of a private airport in Texas and get the last allowed plane to go in the air before all this stuff happens, you know what? There's funny stuff going on with 9/11. I think they needed money to get the military...
But that's
started
what I'm
again.
Saying, John, that's exactly what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying, is that nothing is mutually exclusive. You know, you can be honest and dishonest. No one is 100% goes in one direction. We all have good qualities. We all have bad qualities. The only difference in my mind between good people and bad people, good people have more good qualities. Bad people have more bad qualities. That's all the difference is. And it's like a rainbow, right? It's not just black or white. We're all variations on a theme, right? So, I agree with you. Your points are not hard to agree with. That, you know, there's the embarrassment factor, and I never even thought about that. That, you know, they're even going to react in a manner that maybe part of being embarrassed about it happening. But, you know, John, we can all look at the fact that they succeeded in getting somebody. Whether they're terrorists, self-motivated terrorists, or they're linked to somebody, it doesn't matter to me at this point. They've taken them off, you know. They've taken them off the road, the free road, where they could do more damage. That's all I care about.
You know, I I'm a little bit curious about. I wonder how many incidences since this one in the States have they had? Deaths in the last 5 days that had more than 10 people dying in a situation, or somebody getting shot in a robbery, five people shot. That stuff is not going to hit the news. Okay, this
Aaron,
is good news.
You want to jump on that one?
No, I'm going to keep my hands clear of this one for a bit.
Yeah.
I like listening to you,
you
guys
where,
talk
you
about
know where
it.
I'm gonna go, do you know where I'm going to go with this one, Aaron?
No, let's hear it.
No, the fertilizer plant.
Oh, good God. We're going to go
good
all
one.
To Texas?
Good
more,
one.
Even more people were killed and hurt in that incident.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
getting less press than what this is.
Frank, you hit it on the nail. You know what? It just I've been following that too, and it dodged me. See, we've been so more or less manipulated with all the bombardment of this Boston incident that a bigger travesty,
right.
you know,
yeah.
not getting any attention at all. Because you know what? That doesn't have terrorists on it yet. They try to put it in with the anniversary of the Waco incident that happened a while back on the Waco ranch.
And Oklahoma.
Right?
And Oklahoma.
And Oklahoma. And by the way, that was a white terrorist. The Oklahoma
Absolutely.
Situation.
Absolutely.
So I think yeah. I just caught the shoe when you guys were saying that there are no white terrorists out there. Somebody mentioned, but that you
well,
know,
because no, Timothy McVeigh was deemed criminally insane and therefore not eligible for
your
trial.
John.
Yeah.
You unfortunately, it's not fair for we're not going to judge what you heard because you weren't really in the conversation. But what
no,
I
wasn't.
Say is,
I caught the end of it. That's why I'm just
yeah,
saying
yeah.
I just recall somebody mentioning it.
I just want to explain. I'm not making excuses again. Again, I hate explaining, but it is the truth. I'm going to explain the comment that you heard, and it was by Aaron. And what Aaron was trying to say is that when something happens, the first thing we do, our knee-jerk reaction, is the stereotype.
Oh, I see. Okay. Right.
Okay.
Right.
So
the first thing, the first time a bomb goes off, oh, it must have been Islamic terrorists.
I see.
It's never always a white guy. It's got to be somebody who's mentally insane.
Exactly. So if it's a white guy.
There's never a white terrorist. And it's the same reason the NRA uses. It's the same reason the NRA uses. There is never a lawful gun owner that ever does anything wrong. And they're technically right. Because as soon as a lawful gun owner does something illegal, he's no longer a lawful gun owner. He's a criminal.
So what
therefore,
Go ahead.
You see what I mean? It's this prevarication.
Yeah.
It's this semanticism that they use that drives me absolutely crazy. But if you want to look at the whole fertilizer plant explosion in West Texas,
yeah,
that I'm inclined to believe that is more of an accident than anything else.
Of course, yeah,
the plant was cited in not only in 2006 for dangerous practices, but also last year for ammonia. I mean, this is something that's been ongoing with that particular location. So.
Yeah, this was just the timing was unfortunately coincidental with it. But, yeah, you know, Frank, you brought that up, and they're not giving it any sort of, you know, attention. Well, they are, but for 1 hour or so, you know what I mean? They went to it, and then they went back to this hunt and so forth. You know, it is what it is. It's a sad situation, guys. But I just love the way the first three – the way the first 3 days of news came out where it was instantly labeled as a terrorist act. There's no way that it could be anybody internally doing it. And it had to have been geniuses because they pulled it off, right? Well, I don't know. It looked like pretty simplistic. They walked in with these bags. They placed them. They walked away. You know what I mean? And
they turned on an egg
timer.
They turned on an egg timer. Went tick 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 tick, and 2 minutes later went kaboom.
Yeah, and they found the information how to make one on the internet. So, a lot of manpower put in to check people's water bottles. Okay, but nobody checked the knapsacks. Well, whatever. It is a sad situation, guys. But it's draining, isn't it? It's emotionally draining and it's mentally draining. And
imagine what it's like for the people in Boston.
Look, I can't imagine what it's like for the
families. And I mean those communities there. I mean these and where this guy Cambridge is not, you know, is not a Jane. It's not a Jane Finch area. Cambridge is a well-to-do area. It's, you know, the college is there. The university. It's a university town, isn't it, Aaron?
Now, Cambridge is a thoroughly white-collar area. That's
totally.
That's, you know.
You want me to tell you guys something funny? Let me tell you what I was telling my wife when I said when they had the whole city on lockdown. I said they're going to find this guy and it's going to be tonight. And she goes, "Why?" I said, "Do you understand that all the gangs and all the money that's being lost on the underground market right now on the streets, that it, because of all the cops and the lockdown, the gangs are going to be hunting this guy down. He's going to be caught some way or another. These people are going to get upset and say, we're losing millions of dollars every hour here, but not having our prostitutes, though, but not having our guys dealing at the corners. We're going to, the mafia guys can't move their shit.
Okay,
so,
John, we tried to establish that it wasn't that kind of community.
it don't matter. That's the city, Frank. It's not the community. The whole city got shut down. I mean, the hockey, the baseball, everything was shut down.
Yeah.
Nobody, the transit. So if you shut everything down,
you're right, the underground business,
you know, they don't have
John,
insurance for this. Yeah.
You're right. I'm not disagreeing with you. But what I'm going to say is the intention was, and Aaron, you can pipe in too. The intention was is to stop having people walk on the street so this guy could not blend in any way whatsoever. If
right.
the only person walking around is the guy they're looking for, he's not hard to find.
True.
You know? So what they did was you know, it, and they said it's just basic, you know, enforcement practice. And it worked really well because it was in a white-collar town where everybody, you know, and Aaron, like I said, you can pipe into this, and John, you as well. These are white-collar people. These are people who are going, crime? I don't like crime. I'm doing well. I'm going to obey the law. You know, they're in the. It's the right community. He hid in the right community for them to find him because, you know, it's a community that has faith in society. Has you know they're well-to-do. They have something to lose. If he would have gone to a place like Harlem, I don't know if they would have had as much luck clearing the streets. Partly because of what you're saying, John.
Yeah, but you know what, Frank? Yeah, I get you. I can
you
agree
know what I mean?
With you.
Like, the people are more. I want to use. I don't want to. I don't want
to
say.
But you haven't been
to
Harlem lately, Frank. Harlem is not that as bad. It's not. It's not old Harlem anymore.
That's where my regret is. That's not what I meant. You know, it's not
that. You're stereotyping.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what I'm doing. And I'm wrong to do that. But
I feel you. I hear you.
The point is that if this guy hung out in a place where people listen to the law, respect the law, right? Who don't have anything really against the law. And let's face it, poor people have a lot against the law because basically the law doesn't work for poor people. You know what I mean? So
well they're also the frontliners that also face the law more than the guys in the house. Okay, that's the reason why they don't like it because they, you know, poor people end up having to deal with them.
Exactly.
On a more regular basis, yeah.
You know, and some of them aren't nice people, you know, and again, I go back and I'm going to dip in that well again. The well that says not all cops are good, not all cops are bad. Not all criminals are bad, not all criminals are good. But, you know, there's a sliding scale there, right? Most cops are good, most criminals are bad. You know, but, you know, good people run into bad cops. It happens. You know, and that's the way it is. So, and those people aren't going to be that obedient to the police. You know, the guy's not going to lose the pimp's not going to give up his business because they're looking for some guy that killed somebody. God,
no.
People get killed all the time. You know what I'm saying? That's the point I'm trying to make, right?
Yes.
So it's no. You know, they're not doing anything for him. But those people who abide by the law and who respect the law because life's been good to them, they will help the law. And I think that contributed to them finding him as well because he hid in a very obedient and conscious community that you know. Cares about protecting the way of life that they have because it's something worth protecting.
Plus,
sailboat.
Do you know how much those things are worth?
The sailboat?
That boat?
Yeah,
that
he had a
nice
sailboat. He was under a tarp in a sailboat. You know how much those things are worth? I'm not going to let the cops shoot the shit out of my sailboat.
No,
I'm bombing that son of a bitch out.
You know, I gotta wait till this report comes out because what I'm still not hearing the full details about, and I listened to it all day long, is that how he got away. Supposedly he ran over his brother after his brother was shot up, and then he still got away. Now, this guy getting away, now I understand maybe why they wanted to keep a certain distance because they don't know what kind of explosives he has on him, and it might blow everybody around.
Literally.
Yeah, literally. Yeah, literally around him. So maybe they didn't want to, you know, ambush him in a sense where they just like they do on a regular arrest. They just tackle the guy or whatever, right?
He's going to tackle, you know.
But how he got away, you know, how he got away in a shootout where the car, supposedly by some reporters, was just riddled with bullets and he still crawled away somehow. I mean, that's an embarrassment, I think, in itself, okay? If you're close enough to be able to shoot the car up, but this guy crawls away somehow – I mean, I understand the fear. I can't understand the tactics because I'm not involved in that kind of a occupation. But they must have probably had to worry about their own safety and kept a certain distance. But still, for him to get away boggles the mind. It just
part of it as well is once his brother was down on the tarmac, once his brother had been, they actually tried to save his brother's life and get him to a hospital. So that is part of it as well. Part of the consideration is, well, you stop for the wounded individual and try to get him to confess. Maybe he'll lead you to what you need to know.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Boggles my mind.
I think what happened, and this is a guess, right, because I wasn't there, but I think what might have happened, and from what I heard, the older brother was driving. He got out of the car. The younger brother got behind the wheel. The older brother left the car, and I'm sure the first thing that they thought about, whether there was they could see it or not, he got the police's attention. He got the police's attention because he stepped out, and they know these guys were throwing. They threw five bombs, pipe bombs. Three of them went off, and one grenade. All right.
Wow.
So now they knew what they were dealing with. Believe me, this guy steps out of the car and he's holding something in his hand, maybe a trigger or whatever. The cops are going to shoot him up good. And the other guy isn't a threat to them, an immediate threat. So, it's Bonnie and Clyde all over again, right? Like you said, then they shoot up the car. But I think they stopped shooting up the car to shoot up the brother. And, because the kid, I guess, was blocked, I heard he backed over his brother and then left.
So speaking of brother, guys, if this is not a fine example that Big Brother is in full effect, Big Brother is in full effect. It's not just personal Big Brothers that we are becoming all of the system, but the system itself is already implemented that you can't get away from anywhere if you're in a major city without getting caught by Big Brother. And it's working. And these were kind of the things that we were told by, people, scientists 20, 30 years ago saying that it's going to become one of those Big Brother states. And,
George Orwell in the 50s invented the term Big Brother.
Is that right? Okay.
He wrote a book, 1984.
Okay, yep. I do recall something about that, yeah.
Animal Farm.
Animal Farm is my favorite book ever written. It is a perfect description. Some suggest it's about communism. I suggest it's about society in general.
Two legs good, four legs bad. All animals are created equal, just some are created more equal than others. Yeah.
Eventually all the pigs run the world?
Yep, because you can't tell the difference between them and the farmers. That's a brilliant, brilliant novel.
Oh, you can't tell the difference now between them. Hold on, you can tell the difference between them and the farmers now. The farmers are the ones on welfare and going bankrupt.
Yeah. And the pigs are getting fatter.
Yeah, because their farms are dying, guys.
Yeah, well, hopefully in Canada we'll help them live. So I guess, we're in the final 41 minutes of the show. We were only supposed to talk about this subject for a few minutes, and then we can get back to sports, Aaron. John, have you gone to any rock games lately?
No, because there haven't been any.
No, that's right. I was going to say that. I go, do you know some games I didn't know about? No, the last one I went to was the Buffalo one. It was a really good one. That was a good game.
They did have their game on Saturday against Philadelphia.
Right. But that wasn't even televised.
That was on the road. It was on the road.
It was actually televised on CBS Sports Network in the States.
Oh.
Yeah, but not.
Yeah,
it was not televised in Canada, unfortunately, which means there was no way for us to see it.
Yeah.
I ended up following it on Twitter, which was not nearly as satisfying.
I thought you could catch it on YouTube. I was trying to get it on YouTube. I thought they were all streamed live.
It was blacked out because it was on CBS Sportsnet in the States.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
That makes sense now. I'm thinking, what are these guys talking about? It's not on there. Like, what? No, Rock are going to be in a week the playoffs start, right?
Yep, that's right. Now, what I'm really hoping for, and Bruce Barker is too, is on Saturday, the Edmonton Rush play the Calgary Roughnecks. Now, if the Edmonton Rush lose, that means Toronto clinches first overall in the league, and they get home advantage home floor advantage all throughout the playoffs, which
would be
nice. Absolutely massive.
And of interest to you. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it almost sounds like a repeat scenario of what the Argos went through, except they didn't get a home field Eastern Division final advantage. But, yeah, to play throughout the whole playoffs, that'd be sweet.
That would definitely be sweet. And it's only three more games, so that, you know, that's a definite huge plus. What I find really great about this league is the fact that there's six teams that have clinched playoff spots. The last three teams that aren't quite there yet are still fighting over it.
Really?
So,
okay. So there's at least something to watch for still at the, down to the end.
Well, it's Buffalo and Rochester in Rochester this weekend. You've got Edmonton versus Calgary. I mean, basically right now, this is going to be some of the best lacrosse I think you'll see played, because pretty much every single team that's playing this weekend is in it with desperation. They've got to win.
So who do you like, Aaron?
Who do I like?
Aaron? Yeah.
Well, I mean, other than The Rock,
yeah.
I got to be honest with you, I don't want to see Buffalo in.
Okay.
No offense to all of my friends in Buffalo and the team just down the QEW, but that's just not my thing.
Aaron, I wouldn't expect to hear any different if you're a real Rock passionate fan. You're supposed to automatically hate them.
Well, here's the thing. I actually had season tickets in Buffalo for 2 years, 3 years.
For pity?
So I was doing a lot of commuting between Toronto and Buffalo to catch games.
What did you do that for? For pity's sake? To give them some
No, because you know what? It was cheaper beer in Buffalo, and I really liked the fans. It was $4.95 a tall boy.
Oh, and you really like the fans there? Okay, none of those Rock fans out there just heard that. Aaron didn't say that.
No, trust me, okay? You got to understand, back in 2002, I started something with a whole bunch of friends from Rochester, Buffalo, and Toronto called the Fan Cup.
Oh, okay.
It originally started as an excuse for lacrosse fans to get together during the summer and get shit-faced together.
Oh.
But over the course of a few years, it grew. There are now what are called Fan Cup teams in Chicago, Toronto, Buffalo, Rochester, Philadelphia, Minnesota. Albany sent a team 1 year. New Jersey tried to put together a team along with the New York Saints fan club. That didn't quite work. But basically, we've been traveling from city to city to city since 2002 to play a charity tournament that's raised almost $75,000 for cancer research.
Nice.
And this was all, like, we really started the big charity push with Les's fund after Les Bartley passed in 2005.
Well, that's good
John,
of you guys to. Yeah,
John. The difference between lacrosse and the CFL,
yes,
something
sir.
That you know very well, right? In lacrosse, number one, 90% of the players are Canadian. Number one. Number two, lacrosse fans have a different attitude when it comes to because there's so much cross pollination. And Aaron, please correct me when I'm wrong if I misspeak here, but
no
because they're kind of all in the same boat. Lacrosse has a different attitude than the CFL because they're a little younger. They're a lot younger than as a league, I refer to, than the CFL. And they do have the groups get along after the games. They still cheer for their teams, but they get along after the games. They hang out together. They go to the same places to drink beer. And the biggest reason is that those places offer discounts on beer and food. And someone who likes to drink and eat, it's not a bad deal. Would that be a fair summation, Aaron, from a novice perspective?
That's pretty close to it, yeah. I mean, let's be honest, the National Lacrosse League has actually only been around since 1986. 1986, it was actually founded as what's called the Eagle Professional Box Lacrosse League. Eagle used to be one of the big sports manufacturers. They were looking more for a way to sell more equipment, so they created teams in, if I recall correctly, Detroit, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, and one other town, Washington. It was like the Washington Wave, the Pittsburgh Bulls, the Detroit Turbos. This is going way, way, way back. And the Philadelphia Wings, who have been in it since the beginning. So it's actually started as a way for them to try to sell more lacrosse equipment. But over the course of the past 27, 28 years, it's changed and mutated slightly into the behemoth that it is today. I mean, you had Toronto didn't actually start in Toronto. Toronto actually started in Hamilton as the Ontario Raiders in 1998 before moving to the Gardens in 1999 when they got bought by a group of ex-NHL players and a few other assorted businessmen. Ty Domi was actually one of the original owners of the Toronto
Joe
Rock.
Bowen was part of that, wasn't he?
Yep, Joe Bowen was actually the lead broadcaster for the first 4 years. They actually had a broadcasting contract with Sportsnet Ontario for the first little bit. They put out a promotional DVD in 2002 called The War on the Floor, which was phenomenal. I suggest you try to pick it up sometime because it's some of the most amazing stuff you'll ever see. I mean, from there, it mutated and grew. Brad Waters, I don't know if that name sounds familiar to anybody here.
Yes, Chum
but,
Radio.
Brad Waters actually used to be one of the owners and the president of the Toronto Rock. He also expanded the team into Montreal and Ottawa with the Ottawa Rebel and the Montreal Express at the same time that he started the Ottawa Renegades in the CFL.
Wow, Aaron, I like the history on it, but I'm very impressed with all your knowledge on the detail. That's pretty good.
Well,
why do you think I have him on, John?
I am a fan of the NLL game. So
Aaron's a very intelligent and erudite guy.
Erudite? No, I'm just kidding.
And there's fans out there that know a hell of a lot more than I do, too.
It doesn't mean he's so. German, John.
I know, I was going to make a joke out of that.
Nein!
He's German.
Ich bin nicht ein Berliner.
Nein!
Nein!
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. That's all I know in German.
12, 13, 14, 15.
That's not my favorite use of nine. My favorite use of nine is nine.
Nine.
The Beatles song, Revolution 9.
Oh, okay. I thought you were just having too many glasses right there. Oh, all right.
I did finish my bottle of wine. Tonight's a wine night. You know, I really appreciate you, John, contributing. Jarrett is at a family function, and it's always fun doing this as a three-way. Not the kind of three-way that people out there should be thinking about, but that's okay.
That's what she said.
So we've discussed the Boston Marathon. Now let's discuss the Rock's chances in the playoffs. Now, if they get home floor advantage throughout the playoffs, that's a good thing. Number one. Number two. The first game that they play in the playoffs, John, this will be of interest to you. With the cooperation of Aaron and company at The Rock, we're going to try and do a live remote as sort of a preamble to when we start our CFL season, as you're aware.
Well, I promise not to call.
Oh, yeah, good one. Yeah, good one. Okay. See? You got it. I mean, isn't that funny? Now you get the joke, right? Okay.
Well, now that I've been filled in that you saw my number and I didn't get that, I thought you were trying to reach me during the show and I didn't get it. So I'm thinking, okay, I think he's trying to be funny. I'll go along with it. Ha, ha, ha. I don't get it, but all right.
Now you know what I meant. And I think.
And now I can
throw
the joke back. Yeah.
There you go. See, now it becomes a joke you can use forever now, right? It's one of those things.
No,
that
all makes sense.
And Aaron, that's all part of. We're hoping to do that with the CFL, the Toronto Argonauts, to do post game stuff there. We'll see if it works out.
I'm more than happy to serve as a testing ground.
Well, you know,
I'm more than happy to participate as one of the testers for that sort of thing. So,
well, I've gotten the show to work on my tablet while I was on vacation.
Nice.
And so we can do the show through the tablet, and
mm-hmm.
you know. And all we need to do is, and I've got some technical stuff I need to work out, and we'll get her done, and then that'll tie in, of course, to the CFL. I've been, just to get you guys up to date, John, I took your advice, and I went to that tryout for next
Great.
Star Sports. Yeah.
Did you have fun?
Yeah, I won the contest.
You did?
Yeah,
well,
I did. But it was... So,
you didn't tell me. Yeah.
I'm telling you now. So what happened, Aaron, is there's this. But unfortunately, it's Perry Lefko's a guy that I met through John. Well, not through John. I met, you know, because I've been involved. And Marty York invited me onto his show. And actually, the show's on right now. Actually, this show is competing with his show. Now that I think about it, now that I think about it, yeah. It's a great idea. It's a network. Do you guys know who Frank D'Angelo is?
Yep.
Okay. Frank D'Angelo is the guy that made his money in D'Angelo apple juice, and then he's the guy that invented Cheetah, that sports drink. You may have seen the commercials.
Oh, I know who he is. He sings too.
Right.
Did you know that?
He has a show on Rogers On Demand. If you go into Rogers On Demand, you can see his show.
Yes, I know very well.
He started this network, and they said, if you come by, we're looking for our next host, right? Well, as it turns out, it was basically just a promotion, right? So, but at the end of the day, at some point, I'm going to be on that show, and Perry, I hope he's listening. Perry says to me, but Frank, you know, you can't do the CFL.
Why?
So we haven't even discussed doing The Rock, you know, because, you know, they're international in scope, and they want games and stories that are of interest internationally. Well, I don't agree 100%, but you know what? You never know. You know, it's my job as a host, and since – the guys there, guys and gals there, the people who are on that network, John, just so you know, you can Google it. It's Next Sports Star. Guys like Phil Esposito, you know, Smith, the manager of the New York Rangers,
yeah.
Michelle Spino, she's the gal from Leafs TV.
Okay.
And what's his name? Jim Taddy.
Yeah.
No. And Rumack, you know Rumack, Storm and Norm Rumack.
Yes, I do. Yep.
He's there too. So I might go on there to be a guest. I won't have my own show, which is fine. But it's an actual network. They actually have commercials, and it's the irony is, on Wednesday, John, the reason I apologize to you or you know, explain something to you, you can imagine how I felt that I had how limited I am to getting Argos on the show.
Okay. No, you're not limited. Never say limited. You're always grateful for whatever we get.
I am grateful, but there's a limitations to my expectations. I have to deal with
Frank,
the expectations.
Frank, you're only limited as much as everybody else is. You're on that same board, but I get you. Go ahead.
So I do three shows a week, and I can get an Argo maybe once a month, right? So it's once a month I get Mike Bradwell on. I didn't mean to sound it that way. I was just trying to make a point here. It wasn't a complaint with the Argos. So, you know, it's a special night. And the friggin' internet goes crapper. You call. And then the internet goes crapper. And I'm going, this is horrible. I'm sick and tired of this. And, Aaron, you know, we haven't run into that because we don't have much activity on the show when we're on together. Right?
Well, Frank, did you know that the show went crapper on the internet right off the bat? You weren't getting the feed out there, and you were going on. You were on the air, but it was cutting in and out. It was cutting in and out, and it was awful. It was terrible. It was just. But the show did get recorded because I heard it on replay, and then 20 minutes into it is when you started cutting out. So these guys at Blog Radio, it's sad, but unfortunately, I like to give them good props on certain nights, but. Jesus, there's been more headaches with it than, you know, positives, like I have to say. Sorry about that, Blog Radio, but it is what it is, guys.
Yeah, no, it is what it is. So then I get an email, hey, how would you like to be on the show, on this show that they're talking about? They're having a contest to see, they're giving guys tryouts to see who the next on-air host is going to be. So I go there, and I do my aggressive thing, and... To put it, and I really felt good. I mean, the crowd, they awarded me with the win, and the crowd applauded. It was the greatest feeling in the world.
Excellent.
Especially when amongst the crowd are people who are competing with me.
Oh, really?
Well, I felt really good.
I'm not surprised at that, okay? That's the reason why I got into what I did, initially with you at the start of this adventure that you're on. Because you have a talent, and that's why Aaron's on the show too, because we all believe Frank has a talent. It's not a surprise to me. It would only be a surprise to me if you didn't win. How's that?
Okay, thank you, and I appreciate that. But here's the problem. My loyalty gets in the way. So now I am hoping to go on there, and to be honest with you, I'm going to do what they want me to do because you know it's their airtime, right? I have to do it. You know, you can't go to CTV and talk about City. You know what I mean? You got to do the political thing, right? Which I will embrace completely, but that doesn't mean that I won't be able to convince anybody that from time to time. And the reason why I said I'm limited at getting Argos, which will work fine because maybe I can do if that network stays alive and stays afloat the way it is now. If I get an Argo once a month and I talk CFL once a month, that's a win, isn't it?
Frank, it's a win, but you have to understand these guys don't know that you're going to be in the mix of it all during the season. They don't know that you're going to be in the best section 134B where all rowdy, real Argo fans sit and cheer for their team. When they find out that you're in the middle of that, they're going to say, Frank, we insist you do a show. So,
and that's all I'm saying. All I'm saying is you know, if they say I have to, I'm going to be dancing a fine wire, and you know, saying this over the air is probably stupid, but I really don't care because I don't have anything to hide. My intention has, as always, has been to do a show that fits into the group, right? What are you doing,
like
Aaron?
Ping pong.
Aaron, what are you doing? Is that your cat or is that you?
No, it's my dog. Actually, she's chewing something on the couch right now. I'm trying to get it away from her. She's got a little squeaky toy.
Are you sure it's not your fish?
I thought it was
sure.
A water droplet. We have sound effects?
Anyway, yeah, we do. With Aaron, you never know what to expect. So to make
I
a
have
long
two
story,
cats and a husky. It's all kind of bonkers out here.
Usually, sorry to interject, but usually I would hear that from Jared in the background with the urine. No, I'm sorry.
No, I don't. See, I don't do that when I'm on the air. I hold it.
So, memories, you see? I do listen to you guys.
Okay. So basically, the important thing is like you said, John, there until people actually know what you're going to do, you have to do what other people want in this business and you have to satisfy them that you're at least reaching the people that are listening, right? That they have. You know, the people that listen to their show for their network for the reason that they listen to it, right?
Yes.
But that doesn't mean you can't build on it, right?
No. So
at the end of the day, I really appreciate the opportunity that Perry Lefko has given me. I really appreciate the support that Marty York gave me. That's another name you'll know, John.
Yes, I do know.
So basically, there's all kinds of stuff going on, and I really don't want to give up on Blog Talk Radio, but if they screw up another big show for me, because it seems the bigger the show, the bigger the screw-up. And, John, I know you'll back me up on this.
Oh,
and
100%.
It's very frustrating. And it's very frustrating. So I got to make a call to the network and see what I can do about changing some things and get a little more guarantee on, since I'm paying for it, I'd like to be able to hook up to the Internet and not have these embarrassments continue. So, yeah, so the Rock and Aaron, it's the same thing with the Rock. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a loyal guy, and I've told you that I believe in the Rock, not because, you know, I didn't have to talk about the Rock when I did this show. I didn't have to talk about, you know, the CFL when I did this show. I'm doing it for a reason, and the reasons haven't changed, you know, because I think it's worth talking about. And, you know, I could talk about the same things other people talk about, and, you know, not get as much satisfaction and have maybe an extra 10, 20, 100 listeners. It's mm-hmm. That's not the important
part.
You know what I mean? I'm
10, 20. Oh, let's throw that in. Aaron, you got to give us the date for the playoff game and the time.
Oh, yeah, no, the first playoff game is going to be April 28th at 3 p.m.
And where can we get our tickets, Aaron?
You can get your tickets through www.torontorock.com. You can get it through Ticketmaster, or you can get it through calling the Toronto Rock office at 416-596-3075.
And what time is that again on Sunday?
It's going to be Sunday the 28th of April at 3 p.m.
All right, 3 p.m. Good. Got it in my calendar.
All right.
Excellent.
And we're going to be there, and we're going to do an after-party show. And
yeah.
Oh, that means it'll have to be in the afternoon, eh? I'll have to change the...
I was going to say, it's going to be an afternoon game. Now, here's the other thing. If you show up at Joe Badali's, because this is where the Toronto Rock Roadies have their pregame parties, if you show up at Joe Badali's before the game, you'll have an opportunity to get a Toronto Rock Roadie card, which not only gets you 20% off entrees if you sit in the restaurant section of the bar, it also gets you 20% off appetizers if you sit at the bar, and $5.85 pint of steam whistle.
Nice.
Now, post-game, if you show your Roadies card, you're going to get $5 pints of Butter Bud Light, and you're also going to get $6 appetizers off a special selected Roadies menu.
Okay, I want to go tomorrow.
If you don't have a Roadies card, you're shit out of luck, my friend.
Okay.
There you go.
All right.
So anything else about The Rock? And then we can move on to another subject I'd like to hit on.
No, I'm good for now. If you want to move on, Frank, I'm more than happy to go with you.
All right. Now, we haven't talked about the CFL yet. They've changed some rules. I know you're not a big CFL fan, Aaron, but I know John is, and that's why I called John, because I wanted to make sure that I had somebody to... Now, John, what do you think of the video replay rule changes?
I like it. What's not to like? I mean, anything that will enhance the right call, I'm all game. I mean, you know, I'm good with it. I'm good with the changes. I like the changes. What's bad about them? That's what I want to know. I can't find anything bad about it, you know?
And then there's the other change, if I remember correctly, the flags. They don't have to use one a half. They can use both of them in either half.
Well, that didn't make any sense in the first place, okay? I mean, if you have a limit, then why can't you use the limit whenever you want to use the limit? You know what I mean?
No kidding.
It didn't make any...
Because it's not the coach's decision to use the flag. It's the game's decision. I agree with you
100%. It's the game's decision. Right. So it was one of those oxymorons that they should have had that in place. It was more or less a fine-tuning. I don't consider it as changing really any rules. They fine-tune these rules, because they have video replay, they just fine-tuned it, you know?
Even The Rock have replays. Aaron, what do you think of those replays, of those rule changes? Do you have an opinion?
I actually am in favor of the replays. I like the fact it can only be used on goals. I like the fact it can only be used within the first 20 seconds after a goal. However, and this is where it gets into a bit of an issue for me, if the opposing team scores... They've got 20 seconds after the goal is scored in order to request a replay.
Well, now, you see, that's going on because the lacrosse league wants to make sure there's a fast flow. They don't want the sitting around like in the NFL where we sit around for 10 minutes or five guys.
Here's the other thing, though.
I think I know where Aaron's going to go.
A lot of players and coaches will base their decision to throw the flag on the replays they show on the big screen after goals are scored.
Yeah.
However, if it's a visiting team that scores, there's no rule that says anywhere that the team actually has to show a replay of the goal.
But, Aaron, they only have that in lacrosse because they don't have the manpower up in the top like they do in the NFL to sit and have five coaches breaking it down within 5 seconds.
They used to have four referees.
I don't think that's the issue.
Frank. Let me tell you why it's an issue.
John, it's not even. It doesn't even have to do with the fact that the whole fact of the matter is this is where the home team gets to play dirty ball.
Yeah, John.
Delay on showing the replay. It doesn't matter if there's a team of analysts there analyzing it to decide whether or not it should. It's the coach's discretion as to whether or not he throws the beanball.
Simplify the comment.
Okay.
Because John's not aware of the intricacies of the Rock and what you're talking about. We've had a conversation about this, John, so I already understand where he's going. The bottom line is this. Along with the 20-second rule should be the 20-second rule that no matter where the game is being played, the goal is replayed on the screen in the same amount of time for both teams. That is what Aaron is referring to, and that's the little dirty play.
When it comes to home team goals, the replay is played instantly because they want the crowd noise for television. If the visiting team scores, they'll hold off on playing it, which means that the home team gets a distinct advantage when it comes to replays and the ability to throw a flag.
But you see, when it comes to replays, there shouldn't be any advantage at all because the replays that are right now, the fine-tuning with the rules regarding replays is getting done because of a bigger picture, guys, and it has to do with gambling. These gambling losses that go off on the bad calls are costing the government money, they're costing a lot of other people money, and they're costing the bookies money. And that's why it's being fine-tuned. Now that we're going to be getting a casino here in Toronto, the OLG wants to be part of this, and now the CFL sees that there's going to be more attention being given to CFL and the gambling. And, you know, gambling brings attention. It brings in fans. It brings in people normally that wouldn't pay attention to the sport. They bet on it, so they will go and watch it. And if they're going to watch it, they better have the right calls on the field. Otherwise, people are going to tune out. And that has another bigger picture rather than just getting making sure, because the CFL survived for over 100 years without replays. And now we're getting all these replays, and even soccer, which was religious, they had a religious sub-law saying that no way are we ever going to allow replays. Well,
the human element. The human element. Don't take the human element out of the game.
Well, the human element too, but they did it because, first of all, soccer was, I think, most of the time being rigged by these guys, referee guys, and they want to have a control on it for as long as they could. And now, because gambling is a bigger part picture in this world with internet and on-site gambling and so forth, that they want to make sure that the right calls get called all the time. And they're breaking their rule too. They're bringing in video replays in the World Cup. That's what I hear. So,
John, I'm going to use the word that you used earlier.
What's that?
Embarrassment.
What?
Embarrassment.
Yes, that too, Frank. Yep, you're right. And I'm getting at that. So when you talk about CFL modifications and the rule changes, love them. It's all going to help, you know. And now that the CFL is getting more TV exposure, they have more cameras to be able to supply that kind of a demand for replay. It's just about time. Let's put it that way. Okay, it's about time. So yeah, all good stuff. I can't wait for the season to start and then see it actually go into effect.
Aaron, I mentioned that to you last week or the week before, didn't I? The new contract that the CFL signed with TSN.
Yep, you did.
Okay, so now the Argos and the other CFL teams don't have to come up with money to put the game on TV.
Yeah,
and in
no,
fact,
I...
they'll be sharing a relative. You know, I think what's more important. I think what I heard was I think they're getting $40 million. John, is that about right?
I don't know the numbers, Frank. I really don't know. But all I know is that it's a sweet deal for the CFL, and it's even a sweeter deal for TSN. TSN has jumped on the CFL the right way, whereas the CBC lacked the advertisement for it. They lacked the manpower with analysts for it. And they've seen the kind of numbers that they're getting, and they're really good. And it's the only Canadian national sport that we have that has the history behind it, and I think now that they see the kind of value, the numbers on television numbers are going up every single year, and you can't fight that. And if numbers go up, meaning viewers go up with advertisements, numbers going up, and it's all a good thing for TSN and for the CFL. So I'm loving the future of this league in the next few years. I'm looking for the stadiums to open up that are coming up. Speaking of stadiums, the Argos are still waiting to tie down their lease with the Rogers Center, which I'm hearing little trinkles here and there that's going to get signed soon for the next 5 years. But they've been talking since our last town hall meeting, Frank, which you're going to be part of this year. The president, Chris Rudd, said that they're working on a 5-year deal. Now, he also emphasized that, you know, this is what we're dealt with and we have to deal with it, and this is the stadium that we're going to be in. But now the Jays saying that they're going to put in grass. Well, if they're putting in grass, even in the next year or two, there's going to be a bigger picture. And now I'm going to go to the next thing, the bigger picture being possibly going back to U of T. And, Frank, as you know, that's where Toronto's playing their preseason game this year. It's just, I think, a little bit of a buffer to give us a feel and give the neighborhood feel up at St. George and Bloor. It's because the neighborhood's changed over the last 10 years. And I heard you, Frank, talk about it a couple of shows ago about, you know, the neighborhood and, you know, they had different boards and so forth that didn't allow a certain amount of volume of people around that area, and the parking wasn't feasible. Well, the museum has reconstructed itself. It went under construction. It's the Royal Museum there is now a big popular attraction, tourist attraction. So, and I think the whole neighborhood changed. So we're going to see possibly the CFL, Toronto Argonauts, maybe down the road hooking up with U of T, I hope. That's what all this is, I think, leading to. So a lot of stuff up in the air, Frank. I don't know what to say exactly as far as where we're going to play in the next few years, but the Sky Dome is going to be there for the next two, I know at least.
Well, John, as long as they hook up with the facilities and not the record of the U of T Blues, I think they'll be okay.
You got that right.
Well, you got to know that the interest in football is going to be pretty much Argos at Varsity Stadium. Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%, John. You know, the template that Montreal with McGill has been acting on and working on is a good one. And I don't know if you listened to the – well – I did an interview, which I got with Jan Karinci, who's in Mauritius, basically on the east side of Africa in the Indian Ocean. Did a 2-hour and 15-minute interview with him. He said, I can only be on for a little while, and he wouldn't stop talking. So I'm going to have to do that in parts. That'll be coming up. And he's an awesome guy, and he was talking about that as well. And I think anybody that understands the game of football knows that it isn't hurt by being played outdoors.
No.
Right?
Absolutely.
It's not hurt by being played outdoors. And if the Argos want to have a Grey Cup again, the same way Montreal, the playoff games can go at the, you know, at they go to the Big O for their playoff games. The Argos can go to, you know, they can go to the Sky Dome or, you know, the Rogers Center for the playoff games too.
Frank, you hit it 100% of the nail. Bob Nicholson, the former president of the Toronto Argonauts, back in 2009, even 2010, when we were talking, emphasized to me a couple of times where he said, "We want to be like Montreal. They're the template. We want to follow their football program. We want to follow their program, period. And
we want to steal their
coaches." I can see that. I can see that, and that too, the coaches too. But I can see that happening right now when it comes to the stadium situation too. You know, there it's a different situation with the Big O and the Sky Dome, but in some ways it is the same situation because it's really not our home, and we really can play there. We can maybe play there for a playoff game, like you said, Frank, when we need, you know, a bigger venue and so forth. But reconstructing Varsity Stadium, putting a double deck around it and some more seats in the end zone will give us about a 25,000-30,000 seat stadium, which would be ideal. And I'm hoping that maybe down the road that could be worked out. But we'll see what happens. I'm just looking forward to this year.
Yeah, but you know, John, that's where I'm disappointed with what happened with the Pan Am Games coming here, that they I don't have anything against Hamilton getting their stadium. You know, I am so glad that Hamilton had the opportunity to rebuild their stadium and change the face of their team. But I think they could have done something, and I know money. But
no,
they should
Frank,
have done
it was
something.
Politics. Sorry, Frank, it was politics. It was politics with BMO Field and with the city not owning BMO and having.
No,
the,
I mean, I'm not talking about BMO. Forget BMO. BMO, I get all
that. No, but BMO has something to do with Pan Am. BMO had something to do with Pan Am because BMO was built for the under 17 World Cup
That's
championships.
Right.
You know what I mean, guys? So there, it was supposed to be part of the picture, but because they were given the World Cup, then they said, well, Toronto, then you won't get the Pan Am Stadium because they're getting the World Cup under 17. And so they didn't bother going and they went to Hamilton instead. So there were, you know, I don't even want to get into it because it frustrated the hell out of me. It didn't make any sense. And all we have to, the only people that we have to thank here as far as the Argos not having a stadium, if you really want to come down to it, is Toronto Maple Leafs and the whole entertainment that they're the whole corporation.
MLSC.
They're the ones that basically MLSC. They're the ones that basically screwed it all up for the Argos. Okay, and they're still screwing it. And by the way, guys, they're going to get in partnership with Rogers because their big picture down the road is still wanting to get the NFL some way or another. It won't be at the Rogers. Well, it might be at the Rogers Center. I don't know because they took out the. I mean, they can technically maybe fit in 70,000 seats if they really pushed it, okay? They can reconstruct it, but CFL will never come back in that stadium. And when that happens, that's when you're going to see all this change happening with the Argos leaving because now Rogers and MLSC has partnered up, and which you've heard talks about that. I'm not sure if you guys had, but there have been talks about them doing that because it's a bigger enterprise, and there's billions and billions of dollars we're talking about here to bring an NFL team, and that's the kind of pull power they would get. But now that that's gone down the hole since the NFL said, without L.A. getting a team, Toronto's never going to get a team. We're not even moving a franchise that, you know, like Jacksonville, okay, which is...
No, it's too hard. The Americans love football way too much, and we all know how politicians are. No, they won't let a team come here. And some people say, well, there's baseball and there's basketball. Well, they're not football.
No.
Baseball and basketball are not football, in my opinion. Baseball and basketball are more international in scope. Both those leagues rely on international players. Football, how many international players, you know, compare the percentages. No, it's an American game played by Americans, and it's big money, and it's a step up from colleges, and all you have to do is look at high schools there. For God's sakes, John, don't smack me, okay? But high schools get better attention and more people at a game than friggin' CFL teams do in the
I'm
U.S.
I'm going to slap. You know, let's not say more, but they get in the range of 10,000. My cousins live in Michigan, okay, Pontiac. They get 10,000 for their high school Friday night games. Okay, that's why you're never going to see NFL playing on a Friday night, because that's Friday nights are high school nights in the States. Saturday are college nights, and Sunday is the NFL nights. So I trust you. I believe you on that, Frank. I have relatives who've been part of that. You know, when their kids used to go about 10 years ago to high school, they were sitting in the stadiums where they got 10,000 people on a Friday night. You know, I believe you. I'm not going to say 20,000. Maybe in Texas, where they're really football crazy down there with their high schools.
They built a stadium for a high school, brand new stadium. It was a 35 to 40,000 seat. It cost them I forget how many million to build it. But you know, it's the size. It was incredible for a high school. But all I'm saying is that it's not like baseball or basketball, which came to Toronto, and basketball in BC, right? It's not the same. It's a different culture. You know, it's a totally different culture. And they would not let a team come here. I think it'd be really – you'd hear about all the governors and senators flipping out if they were thinking about bringing a team to Toronto and not to their state if they need one. And They could have 50 teams in the U.S. They could.
Frank, that's why we're only going to get Buffalo here for 2-3 games a year, okay? And that's all we're going to get out of this whole – this Buffalo thing was a trial run. And it just proved to the NFL that it can't be supported here properly. It has to be part-time support, if at all, until Buffalo gets their new stadium with the club, you know, boxes and so forth. They're going to still be coming up here. And Buffalo is going to get their own stadium that's going to fit probably 80,000 to 100,000 people, and they're going to have box seats and everything up to date. Right now that stadium's outdated, and they have to come and play half their games up here and make – you know, us happy a little bit, okay? But it's never going to come up here. I'll, you know, till the day I die, I'm going to keep saying this, NFL will never come to Toronto permanently. And if it does, guys, let me tell you the scenario. We only got 2 minutes left on the show, I know, Frank. If it does come up here, Toronto, get used to being in last place, not making the playoffs. If we're lucky, maybe in the first 15 years, we might make it after the first 15. We're not going to be in the playoffs in the first 15. We're going to get players who don't want to play up here. We're going to get players who are going to say that, you know, it's not where they want to be. It's all this and it's all that. So if you're ready for that, but you know what? Toronto's more waiting for their favorite teams to come and play. When Pittsburgh's going to play in Toronto, Pittsburgh fans in Toronto are going to come out. They're not going to cheer for the so-called Toronto team. So, I'm just not, you know, we're just, politicians are smoking funny things. People who are thinking it's coming up here are just out of it.
John,
they
you're right about it. It's like a test. And the players, and don't worry about time here. Aaron will tell you, we went OT last week. We were attempting this. We were seeing how long it would take before they cut us off, and they didn't. Aaron, we quit before the Blog Talk Radio did. Aaron, are you awake? Aaron, are you awake?
It's just me and you, Frank.
Really? Aaron,
yeah.
Get up.
He didn't like the threesome anymore. He was tired.
he's still on the line. He's probably gone to do something. Maybe his wife is harassing him a little bit, telling him to come to bed. But, again, now, okay, so as far as that's concerned, the Blue Jays are a perfect example of why the NFL won't come here. They fill the stadium, or their best amount of people in the stands are when the Red Sox come here, the Yankees come here. So, you know, like you say, most of the fans that come here, go to the game now, aren't really Blue Jay fans. They're, when the extra numbers come, there's 15, 18, maybe 20,000 Blue Jay fans. And then when you see 30, it's because another team is there.
You're right. Hey, and speaking of going to games, I just want to remind people to call Chris Andreoli at 416-341-2700 and ask for him. And you get your tickets for half price in Section 134B, Frank, and so more people can join us, okay?
Absolutely. And the NHL playoffs.
Yeah.
Will the Leafs make the playoffs? It's starting to look doughty.
They're going to make it.
So they get into, let's say they get in at eighth and they play Pittsburgh and they upset the Pittsburgh Penguins. Then they beat the Boston Bruins and then they beat Washington and win the cup against what, Anaheim or Vancouver?
Anaheim, no. I don't know. Frank, I don't know. You know what? They'll make the playoffs this year because it's not a full season, okay? The Leafs are only good halfway through, and if there's 80 games, they fiddle out. And right now, I'm just going to wait and see, take it one game at a time. I still have to wait to see for them to clinch. What is it, 4 games in a row now that they lost? Yeah. Okay. So let's wait for them to clinch. They play Ottawa. In Ottawa coming up, so we'll see how they do with them. Ottawa's desperate too. They won against Washington the other night, so you know, I don't know. I'm just gonna take it one game at a time, Frank.
Yep. All right, listen, okay. Thank you again, everybody. Well, John, thank you. Aaron? Are you there?
Thanks, Aaron.
Are you there?
Good night, Aaron? Y'all. Good night, y'all. Good night, Frank.
Yeah, bye. Final words are thank you for tuning in. Yeah, and we had a fun night. If you just joined us, you can watch or listen to the replay, which is always available to you. Thank you for tuning in. And just as a reminder, for the benefit of John, this is how we'll close
the show.
The
following is a message from the 2012 Grey Cup champions, your Toronto Argonauts. If you didn't hear your voice, there's still time to be a part of next year's crowd. It's okay to pile on. Get your 2013 season tickets today. Call 416-341-ARGO or go to argonauts.ca.
Argonauts!